Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week? 3 weeks into the season.
Yeah, I'm doing great. We're knocking on the door of some major Big Ten play, so this is the fun part of the year.
We actually got a bit of a taste of it this past week, didn't we? In fact, your Purdue Boilermakers, I guess they hosted USC?
Yep, played USC, and after last year, everything that was such a disaster, they lose 33-17, but they had three red zone turnovers, including a pick six, which obviously you can't have those mistakes, but the effort and the fact that they were able to hold the highest scoring offense in college football to just two offensive touchdowns, in that game, really promising sign. I still think there's probably a ways to go, but it's a night and day difference from what Purdue fans experienced a year ago. So a lot of positives, even in a two touchdown loss to USC.
How good is USC? I've been wondering, you know, is it time to take them seriously?
Based on what I saw, now remember, this game was delayed by about 3 hours and 15 minutes. There was a wet, soggy field out there. So I don't know, because they're a pass heavy team. So I don't know what to take away. Their offense is really good. They could not complete drives in the red zone, which is a problem. They had to settle for, four field goals when they got into the red area. But they can hit some big plays. They got some big-time receivers. They got a good rushing attack. Jaden Maiava is the real deal. I think he's a really good quarterback. Their defensive line is really, really good. They can get pressure in the backfield and disrupt the quarterback. I think if they're not leading, they're in the top two or three in the Big Ten in terms of sacks and tackles for loss. Their secondary, you can pick them apart, especially teams like Ohio State, Oregon. You could probably throw Penn State into that mix. Teams with experienced quarterbacks and really skilled wide receivers, you can pick them apart. They can surrender big plays. So I think that this USC team may be better than it was a season ago, but I don't think they're a college football playoff contender.
Well, that's interesting because their schedule is kind of helpful. I think they avoid both Ohio State and Penn State, but they have Oregon on the schedule. And then out of conference, I think they still have Notre Dame, don't they?
They do play Notre Dame. I'm trying to see if I can bring up their schedule. They also play at Illinois in a couple weeks. Yeah, they'll have Michigan State at Illinois and Michigan. This is an interesting stretch for them, Jim. You ready for this? So they'll have Michigan State this week. Then they go to Illinois. They host Michigan, at Notre Dame, at Nebraska. That's a four-game stretch where we can find out an awful lot about Lincoln Riley's squad, I'd say.
Yes, I would say so. We'll a little bit later in the show, we'll talk about the upcoming games because there's some fascinating games. And, you know, it'll be interesting. Michigan State, you know, when teams come out of the out of conference, 3-0 undefeated, you know, you don't want to go crazy over it. But it's the start of real competition for these teams. So in that series of games for USC, Michigan State is probably the lightest weight one going through that. So it will be tested, but we are going to be talking again about, you know, the top five teams in the Big Ten. I think the top four is, you know, pretty easy. It's that fifth team, and who is it? Could it be USC that's the best of the rest? Could it be Michigan? You know, could it be Indiana? And we'll start to see that in these next couple of weeks because there's some interesting matchups. While we're talking about USC and we're out on the West Coast, Dustin.
Yeah.
Let's chat a little bit about UCLA already making the coaching change there. I remember end of last season, we were starting to say, hey, maybe Deshaun Foster's got a little something going on here. I went and took a look back. Just a year ago, They had wins at Rutgers, at Nebraska, against Iowa. Gee, maybe something good's going on there at UCLA. We were wrong.
Yeah, we were dead wrong. I don't know how it spiraled out of control so quickly. It's very similar to me to the Purdue situation, because after Ryan Walters' first year, they went 4-8, and they were competitive in probably three or four more of those games. And there were some games where you could tell they were outmatched, but at least they put up a fight. And then the next year, it's just like, what the hell happened? And I feel that exact same way with UCLA. They had Nico Iamalava come in, and you thought, okay, well, they've got a really good quarterback now. And I'm guessing there's some level of, and I'm, to be fair, Jib, if somebody else knows the situation better, then that's fine. I don't know their transfer portal situation. I don't know how many players left or came in. Point being is that it's been a complete disaster, and it makes you wonder if the Iamalava situation created a toxic locker room, or if maybe they had a toxic locker room situation before that, because it's not just been 0-3. It's been 0-3 very, very ugly.
Oh, yeah. They got shellacked by Utah at home, lost to UNLV, then at home got embarrassed by New Mexico, 35-10. Yep. You can't have that. Not as a Big Ten team, Dustin.
No. I mean, those are at least two of those games, UNLV, and then this last week, those are two games that New Mexico, those are bye games. You have to win those games. It's not like they're playing Power 4 opponents there. It's not like the schedule hasn't been relatively difficult for a Power 5 team. So Utah's a good team. You can understand why they lose that game, but they were not competitive. And now, Jim, I'm going to pose this question to you. I'm stealing your mic. That's what I'm doing. What coach in their right mind would want that job? That has to be, if not the worst, one of the bottom five power jobs in college football.
Yes. And I don't, well, let me give a little background before my answer to that question.
Okay.
Because I think, especially here, you know, Midwest for you, East Coast for me, you look out, you see LA, UCLA, big brand name, okay? UCLA is still a big brand name. Maybe not quite USC, but it's still a big brand, big conference. But they're a disaster as far as infrastructure goes. Their incentive to get into the Big Ten was financial, first and foremost. I saw one report that says they were like $200 million in the red. The extra money from the Big Ten was their most driving force. It's not about playing big time football. And obviously money is the motivation for most every team. For them, it was just trying to get above their head above water. So what I wonder is, and as I get closer and closer to the Penn State program and hearing some things from inside, you begin to understand the infrastructure involved in a big time program, and it's hiring enough staff. And sometimes we make fun of that. Why do you need all these people? Well, if you start to understand the logistics that go on, now throw on top of that, you've got to find an extra $20 million to pay student athletes. Throw into that, you know, working the whole NIL thing. Throw on to that the transfer portal and trying to retain players. Meanwhile, just as an example of staffing, you've got to have people watching the portal in the rest of the country at all times. It's big business. It truly is. You have to have that kind of infrastructure to survive. My take is, more than maybe some controversy with Nico coming in, it's, can they afford to be a big-time program? And I'm not sure they can. So when you talk about, would a coach take that job? Hey, it's still a Big Ten job and all that. But you often hear, you know, when coaches interview for a job, before they will take it, they will, need to know more. Who's the basketball coach who took the Arkansas job last year?
John Calipari.
Calipari. He needed to hear what their NIL money situation was.
Yep.
So I think any coach going into UCLA has to say, all right, where are we financially? Where are we infrastructure? Do you have the people, the donors who are going to bring the money in to make that we can build an infrastructure here? So it's a very long answer to your question, Dustin, but it's just to reaffirm what you're saying. They're in trouble.
Yeah, well, and to that point, it makes me wonder, again, the locker room situation, I don't know. So I'm just, this is me speculating, but, and I, this is going to go somewhere. Iamalaba coming in and getting, I don't remember what it was. I want to say it was like around $5 or $6 million to go to UCLA. I don't remember what it was. That was the rumor. I don't know how accurate these figures are.
It was in the millions though.
But yes, it was a high figure. And it makes me wonder, you probably have a lot of UCLA players that aren't getting that. And then all of a sudden we're paying somebody to come in and do that. So there's a disruptor there. And the other, the reason I bring that up is because UCLA, you're competing with USC. You're competing with other Big Ten teams. You're also in a pro sports market that has multiple baseball teams, multiple NBA teams, multiple NFL teams. I can't imagine that the NIL there is very good. I think even basketball coach Mick Cronin has talked about maybe having some trouble in the NIL department. I don't. So you say we have limited access to this NIL funds, and then maybe your quarterback that comes in because he's not happy at Tennessee gets a majority of that money. That's going to cause some discourse among the current players there. So not only is it infrastructure, you're competing with USC, who is the much bigger football brand, at least. UCLA's got a bigger brand in terms of Olympic sports and basketball and that sort of thing. And I just don't know where they're going to get NIL money. I'm sure they have some great donors. I'm sure there's some companies around UCLA, but a lot of those places are, and people are going to get more for their investment if they advertise or pour their money into some of those professional sports teams that I just mentioned.
That is exactly it. But and all this ties together. What you're talking about definitely got to be issues. The source of all problems is usually money. Okay?
Right.
And it's like, it's easier to make money if you have money. How do you get that started? Can you build the infrastructure, the people who could say, there's got to be a lot of big time UCLA grads who are in the area. How do they tap into that money? That's going to be it for quarter number one, Dustin. We'll pick up this talk when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. When we wrapped up quarter number one, Dustin, we were talking about the absolute total dumpster fire that is UCLA. I was going to say UCLA football, but UCLA athletics in general, I believe. And here's what, and we're talking about who would ever take that job. I think it's got to be someone who could say, you know what? It's still UCLA. It's still LA. And there's got to be a lot of untapped potential for UCLA donors. How do you turn that around? you know, is it the right coach with the right personality, the right sales pitch? I don't know who that guy is. And the way UCLA has acted over the last decade or so, I don't trust the people there in position to make decisions to make the right decision.
No, and I think that you can have a program that's you have to have the right guy for. And again, I apologize. I just use Purdue as an example because it's they hired Jeff Brohm. He was clearly well fit for that position. They hired Barry Odom. Right now, at least, he looks like he's a good fit for that job. They tried to make a splash hire with Ryan Walters. Didn't work out. But it feels like UCLA is trying to make that splash hire and trying to get – and I don't know that that was the case with DeShawn Foster. I think that was more damage control, if I'm being honest. But when you're UCLA, it's like, okay, who can build this program? And maybe it's going to take 3 or 4 years, but maybe we can get 7 wins consistently. And then you have that foundation and more of a culture. It's not who's going to come in and immediately transform this program. I think a lot of teams now are going, see, this is the damning part of Kurt Cignetti, is a lot of teams are going to say, well, we need somebody to come in who can just revamp our entire, like that. It doesn't work like that most of the time. Sometimes it does. You can have the guy who strikes gold and has an entire roster follow him to the new program, and it just works out. The schedule's easy, and you play really good football, and you get a chance. But more than anything, you just need to build a competitive program and you need to build a foundation. If UCLA could take baby steps to where year one, let's get to 5 wins, year two, let's get to a bowl game, year three, let's get to maybe 8 wins. If you can build that, I'm with you. I don't know who that guy is. I would take answers on who that coach might be for a program like UCLA.
And also, if you get the right guy, can you be patient enough to live through the growing pains of the first couple years? Because if you have to make this, and I don't know DeShawn Foster well enough or close enough to that program to say, hey, if they had given him more time, but here's what I do know. Firing him after 3 games, okay, you open up the transfer portal to everybody in that program. And, hey, I'm a player. I've only played 3 games in this dumpster fire. I could transfer, not lose a year of eligibility for this season.
So I will say that I my initial thought when I heard that was that same thing. And it was immediately thinking there's going to come a point where a team may not be able to field or a program may not be able to field a team because they have so many players in the transfer portal. First of all, a lot, I don't know how many on UCLA's roster, but there's a lot that have already redshirted, so it doesn't make a difference. They're, you know, they might as well play because they can't get that year back. The second thing, Jim, is I actually kind of respect UCLA for that because they could say, you know what, we know we're going to fire this guy. We want to give our kids an opportunity and prove to them that we're committed to what's in their best interest, whether that's with us or not. And after 3 games, I think it's more than the 0-3 start. I think that there was probably something that they said, this is a toxic environment. We need to do something. I don't know that it was just the 0-3 start because, but again, I'll give UCLA some credit here because I think they knew what they were doing and didn't want to tie the kids' hands and say, well, you played 5 games and now we're going to fire him. Tough noogies. You're out of eligibility.
I think you give the program too much credit. I thought about that and I said, wow, isn't this good for the players? Cause they could bail out after 3 games and not have, and isn't that nice for them? I think after it was an embarrassing loss. I think this is, you know, image damage control because the image got so bad. But anyway, we could probably talk the rest of the show about UCLA. Let's move on. A couple other teams didn't fare so well coming out of last weekend. I'm talking to you, Wisconsin Badgers. Another embarrassing loss to Alabama. Is Wisconsin in trouble?
Yeah, well, first I have to just mention that, you know, we start the show today talking about two of the traditional powers in the Big Ten, USC and UCLA. I mean, just crazy that we started there going to the West Coast with those traditional Big Ten schools, Jim.
Yeah, who'd have thunk it, right?
Yeah. It kind of ties in here because speaking of hot seat, Luke Fickell. I think most people thought that this was going to be the situation where Wisconsin was going to be 2-1 entering Big Ten play. They were going to win their first two games and then lose to Alabama. But now it's all about response. And they weren't particularly impressive in their win over Miami of Ohio. It took them some time to get rolling against Middle Tennessee. Now you've got a very important three-game stretch here, and I know that their schedule is going to be even more difficult, but Maryland, Michigan, and Iowa. And I think of all of the upper-tier teams in the Big Ten, the one you probably want to play this season is Michigan. I think they would have a legitimate chance. If they could get to 4-2, 5-1, it's still got a tough schedule because then they've got Ohio State, Oregon, Washington, Indiana, and Illinois. Tough to find some wins there. But if you can get to 4-2 or 5-1, then you have a legitimate shot at bowl eligibility. But it looked so ugly last week that I don't know if that's possible. If they're anything below 4-2, Luke Fickell may be looking for a new job at the end of the year.
Well, it's interesting. For you to talk about this Wisconsin program and talk about bowl eligibility,
I know.
That's what they're aspiring to. The other score, now, maybe Cal's a decent team, but Minnesota losing to Cal, not a good look for PJ Fleck in that program.
No, they do this every year. Now, what's going to end up happening is I don't have their schedule in front of me. I'll see if I can bring it up real quick. But this was like Minnesota does this every year. They have one really ugly loss, either in conference play or in non-conference play, where they just it doesn't look like they show up. They play not to lose. They make mistakes. It's just it has to be incredibly frustrating if you are a Minnesota fan, because it's like, can we just put it together one year? And I know in 2019, they were able to do that. That was an ugly loss. I don't think Cal is really that good, but this is Minnesota also, they're not going to beat Oregon or Ohio State. So my point is moot, but usually then they upset somebody that's ranked, you know, number eight. Last year they beat USC.
Yeah.
They usually upset a team or two that they're not supposed to. So we'll see how they respond, but that was a tough one for PJ Fleck.
It was, and that's the kind of game you can't damn the whole conference for it, but it's not a good look when a Cal beats, you know, a Minnesota team. I also wanted to ask you at the top of the pecking order here. Now, that's Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon. Oregon seemed to have a pretty good methodical win over Northwestern. You know, they did their job. Penn State, 52-6 over Villanova. Ohio State, 37-9 over Ohio. But, and I want to get your take on this from outside these programs. Penn State won 52-6, and Penn State fans were not happy.
Yep.
The offense was sluggish. Drew Aller was sluggish. Ohio State, they were only up 13-3 at halftime against Ohio. Not what you expect there. From your perspective, is just this, my goodness, you guys, your fans are spoiled rotten. Okay, don't worry about it. They played uninspired. When big games come in, those teams will be ready. What's your take looking at those two teams?
So I think it's a little bit of the spoiled, but I think – to be fair, those teams have expectations to win a national championship. And so on a weekly basis, if you don't look like a national title contender, I think Ohio State gets a little bit of a pass because we've seen at times throughout Ryan Day's tenure where you watch Ohio State in a game. I think it was last year, maybe against Marshall or something, where they didn't look as crisp. I don't remember which game it was, but I know there was one. And people were hitting the panic button. Well, they turned out to win an edge.
That was their game against Michigan where they didn't look crisp.
that one too. But there seems to be a game or two in non-conference play. And Penn State, again, we talked about this last week. So I think they're a little bit more critical on the Penn State side. Again, I can't help but when you're especially Penn State, I think Ohio State, they at least played Texas to open the year, Grambling, and then they play Ohio. Penn State has played Cupcake Central. I can't imagine it's easy to get up and excited for those games, especially since I feel like their schedule has gotten worse as the season has. Yeah, like, so Nevada was the best team. FIU is the second, and then Villanova and FCS team. So you're going down in competition level. It has to be, as much as James Franklin preaches that 1-0 mindset. And remember, teams like Penn State and Ohio State, and you would know this probably better than I would, those teams are also looking to get reps for more of their second team, maybe occasionally a third string guy, and say, hey, we want to A, stay healthy, and then B, we want to get some of these backup guys more reps. So you might see more rotations, more substitutions. I can't speak to whether or not that was the case. I don't have the snap sheets in front of me for those two games, but I would guess that that's also part of it in some of these games where, you know what, we're up 21-0. We don't need to look great. We just need to stay healthy at this point because we got Oregon in a couple weeks. Same thing with Ohio State. So I think there's just a lot of different factors in there. I don't, because of the expectations every year, I don't think it's spoiled per se. I think it's just general concern that you want to look like a national championship team every single week.
I disagree. I think the fans are spoiled.
Okay, and, well, there you go.
But I think there's also more to this cupcake scheduling than you presented. I think everything you said was true. You get reps for more guys, find out who's there. Can we come out of this healthy before the conference schedule? But there's a couple other factors that lead into this, Dustin. We're up against the break. When we come back, this is called the tease. When we come back, I will give you those reasons.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking all things Big Ten football. When we left Dustin, we were talking about the cupcake games that, you know, Ohio State had two of them. You got to give it to them. They played Texas. Penn State, three absolute cupcakes. They were a 40-something point favorite in each one of these three games, which is just ridiculous. If you have a game with a 40-point-something, 40 over 40 points spread, the game should not be played, okay? That's the bottom line. And what's interesting, just real quick note, mentioning the spreads, Penn State, they won that game 52-6. They did not cover the spread.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And it was 52-0. Villanova was on the goal line. Backups in all over the place. James Franklin called a couple timeouts trying to preserve this shutout.
Yep.
Fourth and goal from like the 12-yard line. The quarterback's in trouble. He escapes the pocket, throws to the back of the end zone. This receiver makes the catch of his life to make it 52-6, and Penn State does not cover. Okay. So it's why last week when talking about betting these games, I just said, stay away from this. That is painful if you're a bettor. But two other factors when talking about why these games are scheduled. One is, goes back again, financial. When you play Nevada, Villanova, you don't have to do a home and home with them.
Right.
So you get the home gate again. But the other thing that I think has come up this year or starting last year with the expanded playoffs, Penn State didn't make it to the finals last year and played 16 games. If they had made it to the finals, it would have been a 17-game season. Boy, it's hard to keep your team healthy. And I think something that's not talked about enough is by scheduling three cupcakes, you have a much better chance of coming out of it healthy. Your players aren't playing, you know, too many downs. So Penn State comes into the Big Ten schedule very healthy and very well rested.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And this was always my argument against the SEC playing eight conference games. And every, you know, people could say, well, it's only one more league game, or a lot of SEC teams are playing a Power Four team, so that gives them nine, whatever the case might be. And it's like, well, okay, but you then have to account for that. That's one more game that Penn State is playing, even if it's Rutgers or Northwestern or whoever it might be. Those are still FBS Power Four players, and that's a big difference, especially in size and strength, than playing a G5 or an FCS team, especially when the SEC has so many of those games in November. What right. I'd almost rather see, Jim, is, you know, I would take that SEC scheduling model. I'd say, okay, we're gonna play Nevada and FIU, and then we're gonna play Villanova, but we're gonna play them that first week in November. Just if you want to have that break. Now, I know buys are built in there. I don't want to see it the second to last weekend, because I still want like meaningful football and the conference, because there have been times when Georgia's conference season is over the second week of November. And so you have two or three weeks where they have a bye, they play Georgia Tech, and then they have an FCS or G5 team. So, but I would like to see, and I think that this would help, because then teams obviously struggle in that first week because of the jitters, but there's an excitement to play football. Then I think you put more of an emphasis on week two and you say, hey, we got FIU, but then next week we're playing Oregon, we're playing Illinois, whoever it might be. So I think it puts more of an emphasis. I would just, if I'm the Big Ten, I would say, hey, you know what? We're going to have a hard start for league games in week three, and then you're going to schedule your other group of five FCS for later in the season. And you could say that it might run up against other schedules for other teams or whatever, but they'll accommodate for a paycheck, they'll accommodate their schedule.
I'm sure they will. And the other thing, and I think with the change in schedule now for the SEC going from eight conference games to nine, they now have the high ground, because not only is that now nine league games, they also have a rule, one of their three out of conference games has to be a Power Four team.
Mm-hmm.
So they now, okay, ball's in your court, Big Ten. Do not allow schedules like Penn State had. Okay, that's just unacceptable. All right, let's look forward a little bit. We've got a schedule coming up this coming week. Big Ten play starts. There's a few interesting games. I want to hit some of them. And I'll tell you what, Dustin, I'm going to rattle off five games. I want you, we'll start wherever you like. We got Iowa at Rutgers, Michigan at Nebraska, Purdue at Notre Dame, Illinois at Indiana, and Michigan State at USC. Five games that I'm fascinated by. Yes, I am fascinated by Purdue at Notre Dame. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with Iowa-Rutgers, because, dear Lord, I think Rutgers may win that football game. I don't know what your take is, but this is going to be the second time Iowa's gone on the road, but the first time they've left the state of Iowa. So, which not uncommon, but their offense is so bad. And I don't know. They don't have that historic defense. I think their defense is still very good. Don't get me wrong. And they play good special teams. But their offense is so bad. Now, I'll admit, I haven't seen a lot of Rutgers. I've seen a few drives here and there. But Friday night, Rutgers at home. This feels like if Rutgers likes getting in those rock fights, right, Jim? That's what we talk about all the time. And this is going to be one of those. So if they can keep it close, they get the home field. I actually like Rutgers in that game. And there's a reason Iowa's only a 1.5 point favorite.
You know,
I don't know what it is now.
I was going to ask if you had seen the spread. Where I looked, it was 2.5 points, but the point was still the same. To me, I was a little bit surprised by that spread. Is, you know, have our expectations for Iowa been reduced that much? The answer is yes. Okay. Yeah. With that terrible offense. So I will be fascinated by that, and it'll be a fun Friday night game and interesting to see. All right. That's Iowa Rutgers. Where do we go next, Dustin?
Oh, boy. Let's go Michigan State, USC. Because we'll find out a lot about Michigan State in this game. I think USC is going to be just fine. This feels like a game where USC is going to come in with a lot of confidence. I think this is, again, Michigan State, I think this is their first road game, and they got to go across the country. So I think that's going to make a big difference. I'm curious to see how – now, the one thing I think that will play in Michigan State's favor is, as I talked about earlier, USC secondary is pretty leaky, and Michigan State can throw the ball. Aiden Childs can make some big plays. But the one thing is USC's defense is very opportunistic. So this one might get out of hand in USC's favor, Jim. I think that Aiden Childs is so erratic – and can be a little bit chaotic and inconsistent, that if USC is able to pounce and make some plays on defense, I don't know that Michigan State's defense can slow down the USC offense.
I'm with you on this one. I think this is one of those. I think USC is the better team playing at home. I think USC, they're now ranked 25th in the country. They made the rankings. Style points matter to them right now. Okay, and they have that kind of offense that could put up a lot of points if they get that chance. And I don't know what it is I have in my head. Michigan State, they'll roll over and play dead if things go south for them. That just seems to be their history to me anyway. So I would not be surprised there also if we see a big USC performance there. All right, you got a couple more games to look at, Dustin. I'm letting you take control here.
We'll take control. I'll go Purdue Notre Dame next. I think that there were some positives to build on if you're Purdue from that USC loss. They've got to go to Notre Dame and probably a pretty angry and inspired Notre Dame team that starts the season 0-2, losses to Miami, and then lose at home to Texas A&M. What's going to be interesting is Purdue has given up some big plays, but their red zone defense has been pretty solid. So can they hold Notre Dame to some field goals? The spread on this one was like 26.5 or something. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think this is a different Purdue team. I do feel like Notre Dame's probably going to win this one comfortably, probably by maybe 2 touchdowns for the fact that they're at home. And I think they're going to be playing inspired football. And I just don't know. I think Notre Dame has the running back group to, if they're able to take an early lead in this game, they can just run the football, kill clock, and their quarterback and their receivers are good enough to, you know, pick up first downs on third. The other problem is Purdue's had trouble getting off the field on third and fourth down. I think Notre Dame could take advantage of that. But I do think that this game is – I don't think this game is going to be the 4-touchdown game blowout Notre Dame that people are thinking.
You know, I'm always fascinated with this kind of game. Like you mentioned, Notre Dame 0-2, they'll take it out on Purdue. You know, they'll play inspired. And not comparable competition, but I think comparable mindset. Last week, Clemson played Georgia Tech, and it was on our show where we pick winners. I was hesitant because I like Georgia Tech, but Clemson, boy, they got to salvage their season. They're going to take it out on Georgia Tech after a loss and a poor showing against Troy. watch Clemson kick some butt here. Well, I was wrong. Okay.
Right.
And it looks like it now looks like Clemson season might be over. Okay. And now I wonder about Notre Dame, where on the surface you look, hey, two losses. They were buried last year when they lost to Northern Illinois. Remember? Yeah. Everyone said, that's it. They're done. They can't make the playoffs. And I suspect Marcus Freeman's going to talk to his team about that, exactly that. Hey, they buried us when we lost to Northern Illinois, but we showed them, and we could do that again. Will that message get through or not? That's what I'm wondering, Dustin.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. The one thing I would say is I think Purdue, in terms of their effort and energy and the way they play, is so drastically different. But the problem is I just, from a talent perspective, I just don't think they're quite on Notre Dame's level. So we'll see. I mean, maybe some Notre Dame guys, they're too much in their head after an 0-2 start. I think it's going to be a really interesting game. And the reason I'm hesitant, because after that Northern Illinois lost the next week, or Notre Dame played Purdue and won 66-7. Like I said, I don't expect that to be the case this year, but I have seen Notre Dame come out with a fury after losing a tough game and taking it out on the Boilermakers. So, but I don't think that'll be the case this year.
All right, we'll pick it up. We got a couple more games to talk about when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show talking Big Ten football. And it's funny, Dustin, you talked about Notre Dame at last year after losing to Northern Illinois. There's nothing like a Purdue when you've got a losing streak going, right?
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame would love to play last year's Purdue. I think that there's at least some level of respect, like, hey, this is a different team this year. So that makes it a little bit more challenging, but...
It reminds me, they talk about in baseball, you could appreciate this. When things are going south, you call a team meeting. But when you make sure you call the team meeting before your ace pitches against the worst team in the league.
Yep. That makes sense.
All right. Well, I like the way you went about. I gave you five games to talk about, and you saved what I think are the two best games of the five for last. I think that's great. We have left Michigan at Nebraska, Illinois at Indiana. I am fascinated by both these games, Dustin, and I'm going to keep giving you the option of where you want to go.
Yeah, I'm going to go Michigan-Nebraska next because I think that this is – so Nebraska's 3-0. They've had two impressive back-to-back wins, and I mean, not impressive in terms of the level of opponent, but what they've been able to do on both sides of the ball. I think they've given up 7 points in the last two games, and then they had that season-opening win against Cincinnati on, we'll call it a neutral field, but that was basically Memorial Stadium South, whatever direction. I don't have to do my geography there.
Yeah, by the way, Dustin, as far as our audience goes, you're talking about the Midwest. We have no idea anyway. You could have told us whatever you wanted and we would have bought it.
Yeah, down there in Kansas City out by Cheyenne, Wyoming. But I think that this is going to be interesting because this is going to be a big test for Dylan Raiola. Obviously, he gets the advantage of playing on his home field, but I think that Michigan defense can be pretty tough. And this is the big game for Nebraska. Like, can you get over that hump? This was where they were in a season ago when they played and hosted Illinois, and Illinois snuck out of Memorial Stadium with a win. Can you finally get a win over a ranked opponent? Can you sneak out what I think is going to be probably a pretty close game, right? They won a one score game against Cincinnati. Can you do it again against a really good Big Ten team? So, and then Michigan, right? Sharon Moore will not be coaching. So, and I know that you have a different viewpoint on this than I do, where you don't think it matters as much. I tend to agree with that, but you, to me, you want it. You still want your main guy on the sidelines, especially if it's going to be on the road. And this is a, this is, I have this up, Jim. This is great. The ESPN matchup predictor, which whatever, but it is 50.3%. Nebraska, 49.7% Michigan. So even the experts don't know who to pick in this game.
Let's call it a 50-50 game. I'm fascinated by it because I love these games where teams have to prove themselves. Mm-hmm. And both Michigan and Nebraska have a lot to prove here. For Nebraska, Matt Rhule, the quarterback, love that, you know, from a freshman to a sophomore, the experience under the belt. He should be a different quarterback this year than he was a year ago. That maturity level. Michigan, you know, I saying, are they back? That, there's steps to their comeback, okay, before they could be. I don't think they're a national championship contender, but they want to be part of this conversation. When I ask you to give the top five teams in the Big Ten, who'd have thunk Michigan's not included necessarily right in that top five? They want to get to that point. So this is a prove it game for both these teams. So I really like that. The last part of this conversation with Nebraska, though, is Luke Fickle, Matt Rhule came in at the same time. I thought, think of it as the same level program. Boy, there's a big difference. Matt Rhule still has a chance here to do something with Nebraska. Luke Fickle, I think, is just trying to keep his job.
Yeah, I think that's a big distinction there too, because it seems like, it feels like Nebraska has gotten better, obviously, under Matt Rhule than they were under Scott Frost. Wisconsin's not gotten better under Luke Fickle than they were under Paul Christ. Like, top 10 dumbest firings ever. I don't know why. I still don't know why they did that, but I agree. I think there's a lot of support behind Matt Rhule. He's doing a lot of the right things. The other thing from the non-coaching perspective about this game that really intrigues me is Nebraska's defense has been pretty good this season. Now, they gave up some big plays and some big-time rushes in that season opener to Cincinnati, their quarterback Brendan Sorsby, who's really good. Bryce Underwood, in his one road game against a good defense, was 9 of 24 for 142 yards. So this is another hostile environment he's got to go to. And a passing attack that we don't really know that much about. So how much can Nebraska's defense and that environment of 90,000 plus people rattle him? I think it's at least a positive that this won't be his first road game, but he did not perform at a high level in that first one. So, you know, I think there's a mystery there too. How much does Michigan have to rely on the run? And if that's the case, how much can Nebraska kind of just maybe dare Michigan to beat them through the air?
When you give quarterback stats, I just have to mention it. Arch Manning, 11 of 25 for 114 yards against mighty UTEP. Oh, yes. All right. The best matchup of the week. This is incredible. Illinois at Indiana, Dustin. This is a game we were talking about this all summer. You know, when we looked at the Big Ten schedule, and again, when you're going to do your top five in the Big Ten, it's probably this game is going to determine who that last team is.
Yeah. If you're talking about top five and you're talking about Illinois and Indiana, you're probably going, no. I didn't say basketball. I said football. Yeah. But these are two teams. This is interesting. I'm just going to go ahead and read this since I did it the last time. So Illinois is ranked number 9, has a win on the road over Duke. So a better win than anybody Indiana. Indiana is ranked number 19. Indiana, 62.8% chance to win this game from the ESPN almighty matchup predictor. So that's interesting to me. But the interesting thing is everybody can talk about how good Indiana's looked, but Kurt Cignetti also likes to beat up on little kids. And so that's what he's done these past 2 weeks against Kennesaw State and Indiana State. He puts up a lot of points. I still think we know more about Illinois than we do Indiana. And I think, honestly, this game is going to come down to turnovers. And the reason I say that is because Illinois thrived when it created 5 turnovers against Duke. I think that their defense is a little bit more reliant on turnovers than we think. If they're not able to force turnovers, I think Indiana's offense will be able to produce at a high level. And I don't know that Illinois has the secondary to put the pressure on the receivers. And I don't know about their defensive line. But if Illinois can create turnovers, I think that that gives them an excellent shot to win this game. If not, I think Indiana might be in the driver's seat here. But this is a fascinating game because I don't really know what to think of Indiana other than when Kurt Cignetti gets a really bad opponent, he's going to rub their nose in it.
Well, this is the game we've been saying since the offseason, who's going to be this year's Indiana? And the obvious answer has been Illinois. Now, when a team gets talked about by everybody like that, I have a tendency to say, wait a minute, maybe not. Okay. Are we all, it's inertia. You know, the first person says it, the next person, and all of a sudden everybody's saying it. I was impressed by Illinois' win at Duke. I'm a big Manny Diaz fan. Everybody knows that. I thought, that's give Illinois credit for scheduling this game, although probably at the time Duke wasn't as good as they are now. And I know the turnovers were a big part of it, but seeing Illinois do that, kind of manhandle Duke, that changed my opinion. Maybe they are for real. But this is a game, the winner of this game probably has a very good chance at making the playoffs.
Yeah, I would say so. And I actually, let me say this, Jim. I think, I don't know how to phrase this, but I think even if Indiana wins, I think that their road is a little bit tougher because they have Oregon and is it Penn State, right? They play at Penn State.
Yes.
Whereas after this game, Illinois has USC, and well, I guess they also have Ohio State on the schedule too. So, but I,
Well, maybe
yeah, Illinois has. I think Illinois has to win this game if they want to shut the playoff.
Maybe it's the other way. Maybe it's I buried Notre Dame with everybody else. Losing to Northern Illinois. You know, so hey, who's to say someone could just run the table the rest of the way? But it feels like one of those games where the loser, I would bet, won't make the playoffs.
Yeah,
the winner's still there, but the loser probably isn't.
I agree because if Indiana loses this, they're not going to beat Oregon. I don't think they're going to beat Oregon on the road. I don't think they're going to beat Penn State on the road. So those are two games right there. So then you're looking at 9-3, and then at that you don't really have a high quality win on the resume because they've got Purdue, Wisconsin, Maryland, UCLA, Michigan State, and Iowa. And there's not a win on that schedule where you're like, oh, that's a 9 or 10 win team. That's a ranked opponent. Illinois, I mean, they've got Ohio. I think Illinois could be that Indiana where their only loss at the end of the season, if they win this game, is to Ohio State. So yeah, I think I agree with you. I think the winner of this game has a chance to make the playoff. The loser, but more likely, is probably eliminated from contention.
It probably is. Okay. Real quick, we got a minute left, Dustin. You know what? We don't need your top five. I'd rather get your Tyler Warren report for the week.
Tyler Warren is my favorite. I've said this last week. He's my favorite NFL or Colts draft pick since Peyton Manning. He's the franchise. The one thing I don't like, Jim, is they did this in one situation. I can't remember if he lined up in like the Wildcat or if he lined up in the backfield on a 4th-and-1 and they handed it off to him and he didn't pick up the first down. To me, that's not Tyler Warren's fault. That's like just run the ball with your best running back if you're going to do it. I had no problem with the play, with the decision to go for it. So the only negative about having a guy that versatile is they try to get him the ball in every stinking situation, which you think is good, but you can't have a tight end lined up and running back on fourth and one.
What we found out at Penn State a year ago is there's such a thing as going to the well too often. All of a sudden, oh, Tyler Warren, Wildcat quarterback. I think we've seen this before. He's probably getting the ball. And you got to diversify that offense a little bit. And you maybe don't want to see this in the NFL, but they surprise some teams by letting Tyler Warren throw the ball. That will be fun. All right, that's it for our show, Dustin. Thank you so much. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.